Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's a holiday toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. You just tell me we're getting ready for this. You are officially have holiday brain.
Yes. Yeah, I officially have holiday brain. I'm just in the light. Like, what's happening inside of my skull is presents and meals and, like, family travel logistics and, you know, are we going to get around to that stupid holiday card we've been meaning to do? Like, that's where my head's at. So I'm running out of space in there for other things.
I have holiday stomach.
Yeah, me too.
I made a pretty incredible leftover turkey sandwich today. I was very excited.
Oh, yeah. I like to wait until Saturday for the leftovers. I know that seems weird.
I get it. I understand. You want to... You maybe over turkey on Thursday, so you take Friday off and then get back at it on Saturday. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, the difference between Friday Thanksgiving leftovers and Saturday Thanksgiving leftovers is like the difference between, you know, a Thursday night game against the Magic and a Saturday night game against the Lakers. Like, you just, it's not that I'm not interested, but it feels a little more like work on Friday, getting right back into the same food that was the last meal I ate. Whereas on Saturday, I'm like excited all over again to eat the delicious Thanksgiving foods we prepared. What was the highlight of your dinner?
Of the dinner? I mean, it was all good.
Of course.
I made two sides. I was kind of doing on vegetable duty. So I did some sauteed green beans and some carrots. So I thought both those came out pretty good. But
talk to me about the green beans. What's your flavor profile?
It leans a little Asian, like sauteed garlic and butter, and then so it's got that sort of like, you know, it's not too different from what you'd get like in a Chinese dish, if that makes sense.
Yep.
You blanch the beans first and do all that. So it was pretty good. Carrots were just real simple: salt, pepper, olive oil, roasted. Kind of nailed the flavor, the texture. The mac and cheese, I think, was maybe my favorite, but you know, turkey was really good. That's all my gravy. They didn't do stuffing this year, which bothered me. But apparently I'm the only one that likes stuffing. I'm the only one that likes stuffing.
Hey, listen, I want you to know that, like, I can understand in the situation like that last night that, like, probably you felt like the weirdo, but you're not, bro.
Okay.
It's them.
I didn't feel like the weirdo. And I dare say, I just assumed there would be stuffing, I would have planned to have made stuffing had I known that they were not planning to do it.
Damn, right.
Even if I was the only one that ate it.
You are right to feel that way. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
It's the second most compulsory item on the table after turkey. And I agree.
What's three? Mashed potatoes?
Listen, half my family is gluten free, and they still make stuffing.
Right, because you got to. It's just part of it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, shock to me too.
I'm sorry about that because we had two different types of stuffing at our Thanksgiving dinner.
That hurts me. What year we need to power? I think I've said this every year, but we really need to power rank Thanksgiving side dishes. I think we got pretty close just now.
Do you have stuffing as number one on your power rankings?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mashed potatoes is way up there.
I mean, that's the choice, right? To me, that's the choice.
Yeah.
Now the trick is, like, I think the hardest, do you want to just do it now? We're kind of doing it now. The hardest item for me to power rank is the gravy.
Well, because it varies widely depending on who's preparing and what the deal is.
Okay, but no, but I am in my power rankings, everything is good, right? I have a I have a gourmet chef. The issue is, like, I could argue gravy is number one. Like, you don't
think gravy is a dish, though. Gravy's just like a condiment, you know?
Yeah, but it's such a critical condiment.
Yeah,
that I almost feel like it deserves a spot on the power rankings, but maybe you're right. Maybe we can't power rank it because it's both critical and also not really a dish.
Yeah, because it's not like you're just going to like you're putting the gravy on things, right? Like, it's not like you just drop a pile of it on your plate and eat it without anything else,
of
right?
Of course,
like,
so, yeah. But,
yeah.
But
so not a dish to me.
But I will say, like, the three most important dishes, stuffing, turkey, and mashed potatoes, all require gravy.
Oh, see, I try stuffing. I put gravy on the other stuff.
Stuffing's borderline. You can live with dry stuffing, but by the middle of my getting through my first plate, I've got like a nice little stuffing, mashed potato, turkey, and gravy melange going on one side of my plate. That's all just kind of mushed together.
Yeah, that's also a good way to do it. Also a good way to do it. All right, we need to talk about some shows.
Because
I have a dinner to go to after this. So
all right, let's get busy.
Let's get busy. You want to jump into Red Notice? Because I just watched that. So,
yeah, tell me what you thought.
I mean, look, it's I don't think this movie is trying to be a lot, you know, except what it is. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, it's completely ridiculous. It's mostly, you know, look at these people that you like looking at in these lovely locations that you like looking at them in.
Yep.
And we're going to pop off a million one-liners.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to do some stunts. You know what I mean? But every once in a while, they have to circle around to the plot. And then that's when it falls apart. Like, it's not a movie that holds up to even the slightest bit of examination.
No.
But if you let it wash over you, then it's enjoyable enough. You know what I mean?
Yep. It's a great Netflix watch. If I paid money to see this in a theater, like, I'll gladly pay money to go to see Fast and the Furious films in the theater. Right? I think it's worth the money. It's a tremendous theater experience. And I'm not trying to tell you that the plots of the Fast and Furious franchise, particularly the last few, hold up to a ton of scrutiny. But I say all that to make the point that this plot is far flimsier than any Fast and Furious plot that's ever happened. It is total, like, the plot is so ridiculous at times. And the, like, I mean, you know, it even has the classic action movie twist at the end. And, like, even if you don't see it coming, it makes no sense when it you know, it is both sort of foreshadowed from the very beginning of the film and also totally unreasonably absurd. And like, that is the kind of movie this is. You just can't. Like, when you say they circle back around to the plot, I'm not even sure that's accurate. There's just, like, I guess there's a plot here, but try not to think about it.
It's the kind of movie where Gal Gadot kicks off her shoes to get in a karate fight in a room that is entirely full of broken glass.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, stuff that just would never, you know, there's so many insane coincidences and, you know, like, oh, I've landed in this place where there's a map right in front of my face. Oh, how, you know, all of these kinds of things.
There's a scene where a man who is drugged is trying to shoot two guys that are handcuffed to a pole. And he's standing about 10 feet away, but he's drugged, so he misses. And he misses exactly 6 times to use every bullet in his chamber before he walks closer to them and pulls the trigger with no bullets in the chamber. Like, it is completely ridiculous. But
yeah, not just a man, by the way. My guy, Trace Commons from Silicon Valley.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But
that guy always plays a jerk. Always. He's great.
Correct. And there are a lot, as you say, of like one-liners, but they're funny. The Rock is funny. Yeah. Ryan Reynolds is funny. There are Ryan Reynolds regularly sort of winks at the camera throughout the course of the movie. And it's a fun time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the question to me about this, I think before we move on, is, right, they're clearly setting up another movie at the very end. Are you going to watch that movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
If it's on Netflix? This is to me, sure.
Yeah, this is, a lot of times we talk about, oh, you know, you can't do anything while the show's on. This is the, like, you want to answer emails or pop into Twitter while you're watching this. Go right on ahead.
And when, yeah, and when
there's anything, it's not going to be critical.
And when it, and when they, when the big noises start happening, look up, check out the cool stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's not an important movie, but it is, I found it quite enjoyable. I chuckled throughout it, and there were cool explosions and stuff.
Yeah. I didn't have a bad time at all, but I would not tell anyone it's good. That makes sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would be hard to make an argument for Red Notice as a quality film.
Yeah, you just can't. But fun. It's still fun.
Yeah, and again, like, there is enough sort of camera winking throughout it that they knew what it was.
Yeah, for sure. On the Are We Sure It's Good tip, Sex Lives of College Girls. I am all in on this show in that like I devoured those two episodes and I would have watched more had they been had they been provided.
I think,
but I can't tell if it's just that we like this kind of stuff or that it's actually good. I honestly don't know.
I don't think it's clear yet. I don't think it's so much that you're confused as that it's not totally clear. Because what I was going to say is, you know, through the two episodes, which is like, you know, 85, 90 minutes of content, I think it is pretty clearly caught in between like TBS sitcom and HBO, you know, exploration of women's issues at college. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to have to find a groove that's different in some way from exactly the first episode or two. We'll see. But I will say this. Here, what we do have is a show with some very charming young actresses who are playing very charming young characters. And just an sort of boundless world of interesting social issues to explore.
Yes. I'd say all of that's true. The characters are especially well done.
Yep.
It's a comedy that doesn't have a ton of like straight up laughs so far.
Nope.
You know what I mean?
But you know, it's very clearly
sharp
like
and
a,
interesting.
Yeah. It's very clearly a sort of, not necessarily speaking truth to power sort of comedy, but just like, hey, let us tell you about being young women. It's pretty crazy, you know? And you know, we've been here for that on a number of different occasions, and I don't expect this to be any different. I'm intrigued, and I think it has a chance to be really good, but I also think you're right that it hasn't totally found its lane just yet.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see if it does. That is a conditional recommendation from me.
Yeah, but I do want to say, like, I guess it's four young women in the main room, right? Because it's the soccer player, it's the like small town sort of sheltered girl, it's the like rich girl with the brother, and then it's the sex crazed Indian girl, and they're all four
I was curious to see what adjective you were going to go for in that last one.
it's the best I can come up with. They're all four of them are through, again, about 90 minutes of screen time, really well-drawn, interesting young women. And that's a, I think that, if, you know, putting everything else aside, that's a good job to sort of set you up through what's essentially, you know, an extended pilot, I would say, for like, here are who these women are. And I feel like I know all of them reasonably well at this point, which is saying something.
And that you like them in that span of time is a good feat.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah.
Like for, I'm part of this show.
Yeah. And even though, so, like, I mean, obviously the, you know, sort of, rich girl blonde with the brother is set up to be kind of not unlikable, but there are certainly some unlikable things, but she's set up to be a bit dodgy, to say the least. Even if you don't like love her as a person or want her to be your friend, it's just, she's a very real person. Like, it's like, oh yeah. Uh-huh. Like, I feel like I knew most of these girls in college.
She's going on a journey, that girl, right? That's the girl who's going on, right? That's the vibe you get from that. And it's like, look, most of the guys are either doofuses or sex objects, and they're kind of set up that way. But it's like, I'm here for that. We've certainly seen the reverse.
Turnabout is fair play.
And
I think, the older brother is like a nice, a sage sex object, which is nice.
Yeah. For sure. It how do you think because obviously Megan Kaling's involved. How do you think this compares to Never Have I Ever?
It's an interesting question. It's obviously very different. It's like a generation older, right?
Right.
Which I think, you know, the first obvious difference is it's far more explicit. And I think it clearly, at least some of its DNA is more in the, you know, girls sort of social issues, drama comedy, as opposed to just like teen goofy comedy.
Yeah.
Teen rom-com, essentially. Like, it's not that Never Have I Ever doesn't get into any real issues. Clearly it does. It's a very good show. We liked it. But it's much more in the WB, you know, CW vein. And this is much more in the HBO vein.
Yes. Yes. It's been HBO Max. So, all right. I'm into it. I also like the girl in the wheelchair with the TikTok accounts. She seems cool.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. More pro begin.
Yeah, the naked party. The naked party yes. was a tremendous thing. This
definitely
was...
MVP of the naked party for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
all right.
I mean, look, it's a show that you can see some of its ancestors pretty clearly. It is also a pretty unique show in terms of things that have been on television.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Jagged.
Yeah.
The second of five documentaries in the HBO Music Box series. I don't entirely know what to say other than that it's one of those where it's like, man, like, you know, teenage guy me 1994, like, it was mad about some stuff with Atlantis that, like, when you look back on it, you're like, I was dumb. Why do I care about any of that? You know what I mean?
Do you mean? Because you're older than me, and this is a place where this makes a difference, right? So how old are you in 95 when?
So I would have been, I was in college. It would have been 19, or 95 okay. would have been 20. 20, yeah, I was born in 25.
Right, because that's when Jagged Little Pill came out, right?
Yeah, I thought it was, I kind of thought it was 94 in my head, but I think you're right. It actually was 95. And I was definitely like, I thought she was fake because it was, you know, because she was a teen popper.
So you were aware, you were aware of her like Tiffany phase.
Yeah. No, that was a thing. Right. And like authenticity in the mid-90s, right? Like, that was a thing. So she committed crimes to commit her safe version of female rage. You know what I mean?
There's two funny things about that, right? One is, I'm 14. I was totally unaware of any previous history of Alanis. I'm the guy who was listening to Q101, and all of a sudden, my mind got blown by a voice I still to this day have never quite heard the like of. And a like yelling woman who was rocking. She rocks the fuck out. And like, I love that album. And I still love that album. And I loved this film. I was not overly excited to watch it. And I don't know why. I just didn't remember, I guess. I haven't listened to Alanis enough over the last few years, perhaps. But like, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was really well done. I thought, first of all, it was just an incredible like memory trip for me, but also incredibly educational because I literally found out about Alanis's teen pop career. And I found out that she was on You Can't Do That on Television like 2 days ago. I did not know that stuff. And so for me, that was kind of mind blowing. And it totally put some of the brouhaha that I vaguely remember. But you have to remember, at 14 in 95, like, cultural commentary wasn't really getting to me. You know?
Right.
I heard
you're
the songs
just,
on
you're
the
just
radio.
You're just getting what your friends are talking about. Yeah.
You yes. know what I mean? And I went to fucking Blockbuster Music and I bought the CD and then I just listened to it a lot. Like, that was my experience with Alanis Morissette. So this was just a fascinating exploration of so much about that time in her life that I was totally unaware of. And really, my other than I just love that, and I would strongly recommend it to anyone my age. The other thing I was struck by was I don't understand why Alanis is upset, because Alanis has disavowed this.
Yes, I think she felt it was sensationalized.
I think she may have said sensationalized. She may have used the word salacious, and I'm not sure what she's talking about. Are you?
I'm assuming it's some of the exploitation stuff, or that she had some consensual relationships when she was 15, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but those are all things that she seemed to somewhat freely share and to be not just to like be ready to say it, but to really have done the work to have a full understanding of how she processed the things that happened to her when she was young.
Yep. And I didn't think the movie like dwelled on that stuff.
No.
It certainly could, you know, you want to know about section. They could have handled that in a much more sensational way if they had chosen to, you know what
no,
I mean?
No, they basically were like, we're all totally fine with not knowing. That was basically the attitude the movie took. And then later,
this is guy, but you know, it might not be. And we're okay with that.
And the thing is, what is dwelled on more than anything in this film, and I think to the film's credit, is just how important and sort of transformational Alanis Morissette was to the alternative rock community. Like, they basically credit her with Lilith Fair, which I don't think she was ever a part of, you know, like I mean, and I'm saying like, she probably deserves some of that credit. I'm not disagreeing with him. I'm just saying if I had to describe, you know, if I had to elevator pitch this documentary to someone just to like convince them to watch it, it would basically be, it's a really interesting, deep exploration of Alanis Morissette around the time of Jagged Little Pill and the tour that followed it. And it really shows you just how influential she was as a huge female solo artist in the mid-90s. Like, that's what this is about. And I would think she would feel gratified.
You would think. I don't know. I mean, I would assume that she saw, obviously she saw Cut before it came out because she had her objections.
Right.
But yeah, it is. I was also a little bit like, what was she so mad about at the end? You know what I mean? So,
yeah. And I mean, she's on tour right now with Garbage and Shirley Manson, who's in the film. And like, nobody, nope, not one person in this film has anything negative to say about her.
Right. And there's the Broadway show and all that stuff. So I don't know.
I mean, the guys who left her band are like, she's so wonderful. That was one of the best. You know, Taylor Hawkins, who's in the fucking Foo Fighters, is like, that might be my favorite tour ever.
Yeah. It was also like, we were kind of assholes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If anything,
she was great.
She is cast in the ultimately most positive light possible. So, you know, I just think it's unfortunate that for whatever reason, she didn't feel like this was doing the right thing. Cause I got to say, I thought it did right by her at every turn.
Right. And ultimately her objection, I think, only served to, you know,
draw
publicize
more
the movie if you draw more attention to it. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I've told the story, but I did go to the Jagged Little Pill tour because Radiohead opened up. And I remember just being super angry that, you know, there were 20,000 people there and none of them could give a rat's ass
about Radiohead.
Yeah. That's so funny. Bitter. What I should have been like, that this is so awesome that like this person is huge and opening up, you know, people's eyes to some of this music. She and they actually included this in the doc, which I was a little surprised that she covered Fake Plastic Trees on that tour, you know? And I was like, and I ought to be, instead of making good for her, you know, my dumb teenage brain was like, you know, she's messing this all up for me. So sorry, Alanis. I didn't gauge you the proper perspective at the time. And I wish I had. So there you go.
Great. Yeah, I think I handled her perfectly at the time, and I still feel good about it. Even just looking at that album cover gives me like happy feelings. I love that album, and I think I've spent the last few days listening to that album a lot, and it's still so damn good, man. She rocks, and also the point that was made in this documentary is so true that like, there was a whole fucking national industry. I'm sorry, I'm swearing a lot about Alanis Morissette, but I'm very passionate. There was a whole industry created out of calling her angry, and it was the one song. She had one angry song on the album. The vast majority of that album is like hopeful and rocking and some tremendous ballads, and her voice is like mind-blowing, man.
Yep. And you got to look at the successful stuff she did after none of it was angry. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, Ride 3 is an angry song, I think. It's not just You Ought to Know. But you know, she had pretty good reasons, right?
Wait, what song did you say?
Ride 3 You?
Yeah, it is, but it's not. I don't know if angry is the right word for it. It's cutting, right?
Yeah.
It's sharp, and it's definitely, like, it comes from a place of hurt, but it's also has a triumphant feel to it in a way, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not this rah angry lady song. The one song that's really like that is You Ought to Know.
Right. So, and you know, and there was a lot of like, maybe defiant is a better word. Coming up at the time, you know what I mean? That
by
I
the way,
a lot of girls got to hear because of that. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, and by the way, this led me down a 90s women of rock hole, no pun intended, which did end up with me blasting Celebrity Skin in my headphones. And I tweeted this, but I don't know that there's a better first 10 seconds of a rock and roll song than Celebrity Skin.
Ooh, yeah.
Think about that.
It does come in like, hot. It does
when
come
we,
in hot.
I mean, it's a good, it's a good, not great song. I'm not a huge Hole fan, actually.
Yeah.
But the first 10 seconds of Celebrity Skin, like, just put it on when we get off. It rocks so hard. It's a great opening line. And then, you know, then a song happens that's pretty good. But that first 10 seconds, man, it comes in hard and fast.
Yeah, the 90s were fun.
Yeah. And that was another thing about this documentary, right? After Woodstock 99 was like, remember the end of the 90s? That was not fun. This was a reminder of some fun stuff in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. I have noticed that, like, footage from that Woodstock 99 has made it into, like, you know, a couple of these docs now, right? I think there was a half a second of it in this one, and there's definitely a bunch of it in the DMX one that comes after that. So,
yeah.
So HBO's getting their money's worth from that one.
Yes.
all right. Let's talk challenge. Are you ready?
Yeah. Sorry, for a second I was like, are we already? Yeah, but we are. We're already at the challenge. Let's go.
We are at the challenge. I thought that this was a fine episode of the challenge. I don't totally understand where the players are coming from here still. And I know we've had some version of this conversation before. But if we think the final is it, if there's any chance of the final is going to be an individual final, do you not? Isn't it just everyone's advantage to have some weak people around, right? Like, I don't understand necessarily the process of elimination that took place here, where everybody's kind of like, let's get rid of Big T. I don't want to run a final with Big T. Isn't Big T exactly who you want to run a final against? Not with, against.
Yes. You're right about that. You would want to run a final with, you know, against Big T. That said, I mean, I think we have to say it's just as likely to be a team final as it is to be individual. Like, I don't know that one is more likely than the other. Maybe it is more likely to be individual. But also, sometimes in individual finals, you have, like, pairs for stretches of it, right?
Right.
So, like, and who knows? Sometimes you get to control that stuff. Sometimes you don't. Like, I can understand both sides of that particular aspect of the Big T argument. I think the bigger question is, what was the whole... Like, there was this whole conversation about how they wanted to do it. Tori never should have been on the table. That was so confusing to me. Because they're talking about not wanting to get infiltrated, but, like, Tori's the one person who's definitely going to infiltrate you. And as
long
as...
In a good way.
Right, in a good way. And as long as Big T is in there, she's not going to win. Like, let's be serious. So
I mean, well, you know, look, that's what you have to think. I have to say, right? Like, obviously, it didn't play out that way, but, like, if ever there was an elimination that, like, where Big T really had the opportunity to win, it was this one, don't you think? Right? It's a puzzle. It's water.
Yeah. Like, yes.
There wasn't really much swimming,
but that's
like
right.
This is as level of playing field for Big T as you're gonna get. So.
But there's never going to be a lot of swimming in an elimination, right? Because they're all
right.
in an arena. So, like, the fact, I have a hard time saying it as easily as a lot of the people on the show do, but, like, she's not up to snuff. I love Big T, but she doesn't belong. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, Emmanuel was even more blunt about it.
Yeah. And it's a bummer, like, because she's seems great and everyone loves her.
Yeah.
And obviously her political game is so strong that she keeps getting pretty far. But there comes a time in pretty much every challenge where everyone up there is going to be like, I feel bad, but you don't belong here. And the other part of it is, you know, to answer your initial question, it doesn't, I'm not even sure that there was a get Big T out of here attitude. It doesn't matter, because as long as people can pick their own opponent, whoever they put down was picking Big T.
Right. For safety reasons.
Exactly.
I think that's fair. That's true. Yeah.
So there was no way around Big T going into this elimination.
Yeah. And getting, like I said, getting sent home. She got it. As favorable elimination as she was going to get.
And remember, she was already sent home.
Right. Like, I do remember that because there was a point where she was like, last season I got sent home just before the final and I can't have that happen again. I'm like, it kind of already happened. So it can't happen again, you know?
Yeah.
It is what it is.
The other Amanda, just like the fighting with thin air thing is just starting to get on my last nerve. Like
that's actually a good segue to my burn of the week, which was Casey going, I have weird, Amanda being positive.
She's putting in the work and she's being really positive. I know, weird. It was an incredible line. Incredible. I also thought I had that written down, and I also wrote down the Emmanuel at the beginning being like, Kyle, you don't want to call me in? Bark, 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 bark. And then he was like, you what? You only call me in for a call brawl? I'll still kick your ass. Bark, 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 bark.
And then he get into his face, which I also appreciate.
Yep. And all of that said, and by the way, Emmanuel was the only guy who saw the elimination thing. Like, everyone's talking about Tori and there's all this trouble. And he's like, you put in Big T, she picks Emmy, Emmy wins, goes back to Sapphire, boom, done. Right? And by the way, like, I get Big T is the weakest competitor there. Who's the second weakest?
Amanda.
Exactly. So what are you so worried about, Emerald? Is it really that big of a difference if Big T somehow managed to beat Emmy and then replaced Amanda on your team, who was only there a week and is not positive for team chemistry? Like, what are we talking about here? They had this whole freak out.
Big T would be bad at missions, but at least she would not be bad for team communication.
Yeah, right? She'd be fine. She'd be more, six of one, half dozen of the other with Amanda. Like, I just didn't understand the whole production. Everything about Emmanuel and everything about the elimination said, Emmy was my episode MVP. And as somebody, I think Nelson said in an ITM at the end, she's the rookie of the year. Like,
what is this? Five elimination wins now? Four?
Four.
I don't know. Whatever.
Four elimination wins. Credit to Emmanuel and Logan for being in the game and looking like they're going to make a final, at least one of them. But Emmy's the rookie of the year. It's done. She's so good. She is so funny. And she's all heart, man. She wears her heart on her sleeve.
Yeah. Yeah, she should. I mean, when she wins, it's so great. Her
good.
Reaction when she wins. Like, this is for my grandmother!
Her grandma!
So good.
Somehow, by the way, that elimination, as you said, was swimming in an icy, hot tub. A hot tub-sized pool that was filled with ice. Ringing a bell, swimming back through the pool, getting onto a sand field, and putting together a large puzzle. And somehow, at the end of it, she was bleeding in, three places. No physical interaction with anyone, no sharp objects, and she's bleeding and, screaming to the heavens about how she did it all for her grandma. All she wants to do is make her grandma proud. And by the way, she says the word dude with the most delightful frequency and hilarious accent. It just makes me so happy.
It is great. It is great. You're right. You can't fight it. I mean, she's in. And I think, I think we have the girls who are going to be in the final.
It seems likely that it will be 5-5. Which does mean, to me, in my head, if it is 10 finalists, 5 guys, 5 girls, that almost guarantees an individual final. Because you can't make even teams.
Right.
Unless it's pairs. It's just guy-girl pairs. You know, So if you have teams of five,
right, there may be some combo of that, right, where you have pairs to start and then eventually split up and go from there. But I don't, I really do think it's going to be an individual final. I guess we'll see.
The other option is they could go another round of eliminations and do, you know, two teams of four.
What would you make a TJ say, don't get comfortable at the end? Those were his final words.
That, to me, that could have meant this team stuff is over, you know? Like, there's TJ's, first of all, TJ says that kind of stuff when nothing's about to happen. But this is the time of the game where, you know, we're going to move into the final phase. So how that happens and what the sort of facts on the ground are when we enter the final is going to be interesting.
Yes, indeed. Let's hit All-Stars real quick, if you don't mind.
Well,
we did MVP. Right, Emmy's the MVP. Yeah, I'm gonna make sure.
Emmy's the MVP. She's the MVP. I do want to address one thing.
Okay.
Oh,
was it that moment where they were? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's two things actually. What were you going to say though?
I was going to say there was a moment where the camera caught Emmanuel during the daily challenge, and he was like running, and his eyes rolled up into his head because he was so tired, and he looked like an actual vampire, and that was delightful.
I did not catch
just took notes.
Oh man, I might have to rewind and check that out, and let's just like freeze frame it. First of all, I was just gonna say I took a note that CT said, and it was in an ITM, but he was talking about Kyle, and he was like, "Look, man, at the end of the day, he does sneaky stuff, and then he laughs it off, and he's like, no one can stay mad at me for too long, right?" And I was thinking about, like, I don't even know if Kyle does that on purpose. Like, I don't know if it's sneaky stuff, because that to me implies some sort of intent. And sometimes I think he's just doing stuff and not thinking at all, and then afterwards realizing what he did. But ultimately, I'm not sure it matters, because that's what he's going to do. Like, whether it's on purpose or not, he's going to do something you're not expecting. And then when you're like, bro, you're not supposed to do that, he's going to be like, I'm Kyle.
You love me anyway.
That CT really nailed it. And then
CT's
here's the other
going
thing.
To win, by the way. Right?
Of course
we all know this, right? CT's going to win.
I mean, well, it's just a question of who else wins. And look, if you know, there's some sort of race or something at the end, maybe one of the other guys can pull it out over the last 100 meters or whatever, but like, there's no doubt he's going to be in it to the final moments.
Yeah. He might get hurt. That's the only way. Maybe he gets hurt, but otherwise he's going to win.
Here's my final question about the, what did we decide we were going to call it last week?
What did we decide?
It was your idea. You had like a really good idea.
Senior circuit. I feel like is where we started.
No. Because you originally, we were going to call the All-Stars the senior circuit, but
the mothership.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what it was. So, this is my final mothership question for you. Kyle said in an ITM that Devin has gone power mad. Do you think he's right? Like, has Devin overplayed his hand at this point?
I think Devin's getting a little insecure. I think that's all it is. I don't know that it's power mad, but
okay.
I think he realizes what we realize, which is that he's in a really good position to win.
Right. So. And he's like anxious about, you know, not somehow blowing this at the final turn.
Right.
I kind of think you're right. But
exactly.
He definitely, like, he is trying to grab a hold of things he should just be leaving alone.
So, Challenge All-Stars. If I'm going to make a sports analogy, very Buffalo Bills-like, I feel like, with their performance this season. Looked really great last week. Maybe not so much this week. What do you think?
I hear you, but I don't know if the Bills thing works, because it's almost like different skills, right? Like, Ayana showed us if it's going to be a straight up physical mano a mano situation, none of these girls want a piece of her.
Right.
But maybe her politics, sort of managing personal relationship ability is not necessarily on par with her physical ability.
Yeah. So it's like her physical elimination ability is like the Bills passing game, and her social game is like the Bills run game. Is that
yeah? Maybe. Maybe that's it. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's a week where like, God, with that passing game, how's anyone going to stop her? And then it's like, oh, that's how.
Oh, right. She's just making her run the ball. I also thought, man, these guys are very bad at tic-tac-toe.
Okay,
I get there's a lot of pressure when there's a flaming ball.
No,
but,
no.
Ooh.
No excuses.
Some really basic tic-tac-toe mistakes being made.
Okay. You are aware, I assume, since you brought this up, I have a lot of thoughts on this.
Okay.
You are aware, I assume, that tic-tac-toe is an unwinnable game if played properly.
Correct. Correct. Like, I would think that the worst you could do to me in that elimination would be to stalemate me forever.
Correct.
Right.
There is no reason anyone should ever win that elimination until someone collapses of
sheer
exhaustion.
Someone just can't run until one person can run fast enough to make two plays in a row.
Exactly.
Right?
You have to be able to lap either you lap someone or someone makes a stupid mistake. And some of the dumbest mistakes I can ever imagine were made in this game.
Yeah, like, I mean, there were some dumb, like, I forgot to block somebody, but, like, even the opening moves were dumb. You know what I mean? Like, if you played tic-tac-toe.
Who doesn't know to start in the middle?
Right. And if you have to go second, right, you don't put your first piece in also in the middle, right? You put it in one of the corners.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get trapped.
It's that simple. Okay. That's it. That's the whole tick. We just went through the entirety of tic-tac-toe strategy. Like, if you either put it in the middle or put it in a corner, you should never ever lose. So yeah, the strategy for tic-tac-toe was so lacking that I am now utterly, like, confirmed and completely confident in the idea that no one who has ever been on the challenge has ever been of above average intelligence. Like, I always suspected that, for instance, a Devin, who seems like a friggin' genius compared to these people, is probably approximately of average intelligence, and I feel like that is confirmed now by the fact that they could not find one person to say in an ITM, what's wrong with these idiots? Tic-tac-toe is an unwinnable game. Like, the fact that no one even commented on it, like, literally nobody was even like, in fact, I think it was Brad in the ITM was like, well, you know, Sophia's pretty fast, but, like, it's definitely going to come down to strategy at the end. And when he said it, I was like, what are you talking about?
You don't even need to be fast.
Right. Tic-tac-toe's unwinnable. Strategy is just going to make it a stalemate every time. This is a terrible elimination. And then, as it turned out, he was right. Because some people are so stupid that just the very simple strategy it requires to play tic-tac-toe properly was enough to get the win in this elimination.
And both of those people deserve to go home in that case. Because much like the Big T elimination, right? Like, this was, should have been as even an elimination for Sophia versus Jody as she could hope for. And she still completely blew it, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. She completely blew it. By the way,
after giving the whole speech about having honor and, you know, going out there, and hell,
Sophia, we already talked about Ayana's side of it, and we were being frank and reasonable, and Ayana did not politically play well. That being said, I don't know that I blame her for reacting kind of some kind of way to Sophia completely losing her mind. And, like, I understand in retrospect, as it was explained to different people who were not Ayana, that, like, there's a whole history behind getting her hair done that triggers her with this certain style of hair. And she had, like, a bit of a panic attack moment or something.
I know enough to know that you don't force a hairstyle on a grown black woman. And I know Ayana knows that too. So I don't even know that that needed all that much of explanation, regardless of the backstory. Like,
obviously I know this is a rule. Don't mess with a black woman's hair. I'm aware of this. But I assume when one woman asks another black woman to do her hair,
Ayana volunteered, I will do your hair, right? It was not requested.
Oh, I think you're wrong.
Oh, I think I'm right. But I think the issue was not that. It was that she wasn't giving her a choice in the style, right? When she said she didn't want it that way, she didn't listen.
I don't know that that was ever actually said. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe that's all it was. But when Ayana described it, it seemed like she was just sort of going to do whatever. And then Sophia freaked out about the one she was doing. And then it just, the whole thing exploded. Like, I didn't get the sense that there was like a, no, bitch, I'm doing your hair this way, whether you like it or not. I don't know. The whole thing was weird.
Still a real reason to send your friend home. Your ostensibly your friend.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. So I understand reacting a certain way to like a, someone having a, mental breakdown in your face, like whatever led to it. I can understand being like, whoa, that was crazy. Chill. And I can even understand kind of being like weird about it the next day or whatever. But when it comes down to picking someone to go in and Casey is standing right there, what are we doing?
And you're telling them it's a gift. Jasmine got some good lines off about the gifts.
Yes, she did. Jasmine has found a perfect happy medium between her old craziness and like just willingness to throw shade in every direction and a certain level of adulthood that is really working for her. So credit to her. But to not throw Casey into the elimination was insane.
It was a little weird. The whole elimination process, both sides. The Tina Darrell part was really pretty weird too.
Okay, like, I don't know what Tina's doing, man. Because other than targeting Jody, because the best part of this episode was when Tina looked dead into the camera and said, "I'm not targeting Jody." But, and then proceeded to describe all of the ways in which she was targeting Jody.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, by the way, like, Jody didn't have to go in even at that point. The reason Jody went in is because Sophia asked for Jody. Yeah, and I gotta say, when you're trying to say to me, like, oh, I can't believe someone, how dare someone throw me in? I don't belong in elimination. Then why would you ask for the best competitor in the game?
I don't know. That was some weird twisted thing about Anna, right? That she wanted to go out with her head on high.
Yeah, that did not make sense. And when she was like, I can't wait to come back again and prove myself, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe this is one of the situations. Like, remember last season where it seemed like people kind of just were ready to leave the vacation and were coming up with a reason to get eliminated?
Maybe.
I had a little bit of those vibes, so I don't know.
Could be.
I do think Jody is this season's Kendall, right? Where I have a feeling we're going to see her in elimination again at some point. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Jody has a much better established track record of killing in challenges. Now, interestingly, apparently she had never won an elimination before, which I was shocked to learn. But
I didn't think people really like to put her in.
That's exactly right. That's why she had never won an elimination, is because she mostly won the challenge. and people didn't want to throw her in there. And like, she was winning a lot of dailies back in the day. Like, she was a dominator. Yeah. So it was just weird. Not weird that Tina targeted her. They never liked each other. It's weird that Sophia asked for her. Like, I don't know. Just didn't make any sense to me. God bless Kahuta.
Yeah, man. Kahuta's an ITM star. I'm glad he's around.
I wrote this down because I don't know if there's a burn of the week necessarily every week or an MVP necessarily every week on the All-Stars, yeah, but there's usually a line of the week. And this week's line of the week was right before the elimination, Kahuta's ITM, and he said, "I haven't played tic-tac-toe since the World Championships in Moscow in 92, so it's been a while."
I also like, that's good for me because my name's not Steve, I'm Kahuta.
Right, yes. Which, by the way, was tremendous foreshadowing for the fact that he definitely was going to get thrown in after all.
Yeah, it sure was. There was. So, I also even kind of liked, he wasn't going for laughs, but that whole line about, like, every dollar in my pocket, I'm filled with my heart. Yeah, like.
No, I mean, Kahuta, he's a phenomenal combination of, like, he gets the show and he knows where he's at and he's funny, but he's also just a pretty down-to-earth, like, salt-of-the-earth guy.
Yeah, salt-of-the-earth is a great way to put it. Way to put it. I actually had that on my notes. I'm pro-Kahuta.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, God bless Kahuta is word for word from my my notes, and I don't even believe in God. By the way, could we why are we acting like everyone knows what a cenote is?
Yeah, I still don't know what a cenote is.
I'm not entirely sure what cenote means, even though they said it like 15, but they kept just, and no one was like, you know, the little thing, the pool of water, which is called a cenote, right? Yeah. Which, or like the rock formation over here, which happens to be called the cenote. They were just like, so after you finish that puzzle, you're going to go into the cenote to get the other puzzle pieces. It's like, what are you guys talking about? Like, cenote is just like the parlance of our time. Oh, yeah, cenotes, yeah, of course. What are you talking about?
Yeah. The fact that Jody wound up in elimination after she came up with that great plan in the cenote,
oh, man,
just also, like, that's another one. Even Tech was like, damn, I didn't think of that shit.
By the way, that's another just random thing from my note. By the way, the teams were a brutal mismatch in the team challenge. And they tried, like, I think it was MJ was like, I'm looking around and I'm seeing, boy, all the strong players are on the other team. And then he's like, I guess we got some brains, though. But the expression on his face said, like, that is not going to help us.
No, we don't.
Another random thing from my notes, and this is something I noticed last season, but he was gone pretty quick. Tech goes from looking basically like the suavest motherfucker you've ever met in your life. With 5 minutes of exercise, he suddenly looks like he's 95 years old. Like, his face is drawn. He's hunched over. Like, 5 minutes, and he just he literally goes from the coolest guy in the room to the oldest guy in the room.
Yeah, you can really tell who has trained for this season and who hasn't. And in these shirtless challenges, it is ultra apparent. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, you look at Derek, or you look at Brad.
Well, Brad is.
And then you look over at Tech. Like,
oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but Brad, actually, they had a couple shots of shirtless Brad that guy is frightening.
Yeah. Yeah, now Brad looks like he could maybe still do the mothership. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm honestly a little surprised he isn't. Although I guess maybe, like, that whole era just has moved on. But Derek, I mean, even Letarian, Nehemiah, all these guys, I think, could probably hang. I guess they, like, their chances wouldn't be as good of winning. So, you know, if the goal is to try to earn.
Yeah, and the reality is, like, you know, relationships matter so much in that game that if you if you're out for 5-6 seasons, it's hard. You know, you come back and you basically know CT.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty incredible, right? Like, that CT is still
think about
there.
The game Darrell's played the last couple of years when he's been on the mothership. It's been very like kind of, I'm just going to chill out over here. People respect me enough, so I'm a champion. I'll fly under the radar for a little bit and then see what happens, you know?
Yeah, but you'd think Brad could pull that sort of strategy off, right? I mean, Darrell was in the final.
I think under the radar is tough for Brad.
Yeah, maybe.
Brad finds himself on the radar, too.
He's been pretty under the radar through these first three episodes of All-Stars, hasn't he?
That is true. That is true.
I mean, absolutely. I'm just saying, like, historically, it was hard, but like these guys are 40. As long as they're in that shape, you know, and it does make me think to sort of non sequitur. What do you think? Where do you think we next see Johnny Bananas DiVincenzo and Weston Bergman
on this show?
All-Stars?
On All-Stars, yeah. I mean, I don't think I think. Bananas could get invited back to Mothership, but I think he kind of feels like he's moved beyond it. That's kind of what I think.
Like in profile, you're saying he's too big for it?
Yeah, like he's trying to do TV for real. You know what I mean? Right? Like, I think that's sort of where he's at. Look, obviously, he's doing a challenge podcast for The Ringer, so he's not like divorced from it. But I think he's sort of been like, I've done 17 of these. Uh-huh. It's getting harder for me to do well.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's ready to move to a different phase of his life. That's my general
vibe. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I wonder.
All speculation. That's my vibe.
It's a real end of an era, and it happened very quietly if we never see Bananas and Wes on the Mothership again.
Yeah, I agree. I think I can see Wes just kind of fading off into whatever life he has, and, you know.
Yeah,
I don't
but
know
he's still
he's
doing
quite
stuff.
A come back to All Stars guy. You
he's
know?
Still doing challenge stuff too, though. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like even though he's a guy with businesses and stuff like that, like he's. I mean, his timeline. His most recent tweet is retweeting Johnny Bananas.
Still comments for sure. So who knows? Who knows? What a run those two guys had. 20 years getting out of this show.
Yeah, man.
I hope for goodness sake that there's a challenge Hall of Fame someday. And we could properly.
We all deserve it.
Put these people together. We do. We do deserve it. all right. Do you have anything else on All Stars? I feel like it's not a show that's in need of hardcore analysis yet. There's still some fat to trim here. You know
yep,
what I mean?
I would agree with that. I will say this. I wrote this down, and this is more of a general meditation that was sparked by the All-Stars episode. Just because of the way people reacted, the different reactions to nominations this week, you know? Obviously, Sophia had a pretty extreme one. Jody was extremely calm, you know? Ryan, who volunteered himself, took it really like an adult, right? But those adult reactions are so few and far between. It just got me thinking. Like, it really is a pretty fascinating study of humanity to watch people react to being nominated.
Well, certainly when you compare it to like Tori and the like, we're no longer friends if you say my name. You know, kind of situation that we just
watched. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think most people are closer to Tori than Jody. And to watch generally reasonable people sort of flip out in a situation where, like, someone has to get nominated. You know how this works, right? None of you people are rookies. So.
Yeah. In Tori's case, there were only three people. Two of them had to go in.
Now, I will say, in Tori's case, she had reason to feel like she didn't deserve to be, like she deserved to be the safe one out of those three. So that's a little different. And that's also beforehand. Like, I'm more talking about the people who, like, can't believe their name is involved when it's like, yeah, I guess, but you were on the losing team in a challenge, and this is the game. Yeah. And I think just the experience of having your name called it must just really be a doozy. Because it's just...
Can I offer an alternate theory about that?
Yeah.
You're on a television show. We do know that, compensation is often based by the impression that you leave. Getting your name said is a reminder that your time on said show may be short.
Yeah.
And so I think there is some incentive to, make a big stink and get yourself some camera time and cause some drama, right?
Yeah, that's probably a factor as well. Yeah. No, sure. I think you're right about that. But it's really interesting to watch because... Yeah, people get so offended by a process that's like necessary. Your name's gonna get said.
It's a game.
Yeah, this is how this works.
So and that's maybe sort of why I appreciate the play that Amanda kind of makes sometimes, or other people do, where they sort of go, okay, well, if you put me down there, here's what I'm gonna do.
Right.
Just game it out for people. Sometimes that really helps.
Even if you're lying.
I respect that. Even if you're lying. Yeah. Even if you don't really mean it.
Yeah.
Even more power to you in that case. All right. Can we do homework?
Let's do it.
Okay. So if you're keeping close attention at home, you'll notice that we just cut out on the great. We don't know if we're going to cover the great. I'm probably still going to watch season two.
We thought the great
at some point.
Yeah. Look, we thought the great was great. It's a busy schedule right now.
So for next week, we're going to do King Richard, which is the Will Smith movie about the Williams sisters. And
I'm very excited about this. I've heard great things.
Yes. And then I don't know if very excited is the word I would use for the morning show, but I feel compelled to discuss this season of the morning show.
Okay, I'll finish it so that we can do that.
Yeah, so we're just waiting for Kolsky to wrap up on that.
Yeah, so listen, if you got a couple hanging episodes of the morning show, this is the week. Finish it up. We'll talk about it next Friday.
Yes, and then True Story, right? That's the name of the Kevin Hart Netflix thing that sort of appeared this week, right?
Yeah, a Netflix series. It's not a true story as far as I can tell, but it's about Kevin Hart playing a character similar to Kevin Hart, and stuff happens.
Just makes me think of the Real World Los Angeles intro where the guy in the country singer goes, "True story!"
Yuck.
Of Seven Strangers.
Are you watching that, by the way? Are you watching
I haven't started
reunion?
That yet. I have not started that yet, but I certainly will embark on that road.
Yeah, I don't know if I care about season two, and I'm not sure I can handle that much Beth, but if they do season three, I'll be checking that out.
I feel like season three is a virtual lock unless they're having some trouble getting the participants together.
I feel like that's the most important one to do, to be honest.
I believe that Judd and his wife, who was on the show, I believe they still live in San Francisco. I used to see them around a fair amount. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Like the Safeway and stuff. You know what
wow.
I mean? So, yeah. So, so who does?
Turns out it was the real world after all.
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, right? They got married on the show. Men on the show, they got married and lived a normal life. So
crazy.
Yeah. All right. So that's it for this week.
Okay. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.